Copyright 1992, Acebo. All material on this tape is copyrighted. It is a violation of federal copyright law to copy all or any part of this tape without the express written permission of Acebo. Post Office Box 7485, Spreckels, California, 93962. Tape 4, Side A. Simultaneous Lessons 1 through 5. Lesson 1.
Directions. Number 1, shadow. Number 2, dual task. Number 3, paraphrase. El mundo interdependiente. Nuestros problemas son cada vez más globales. Sin embargo, los gobiernos que deben resolverlos son nacionales. He aquí el contraste dominante del tiempo actual. Con respecto al problema de la droga y el narcotráfico, por ejemplo, la coca se cultiva en un país, se refina en otro y se vende en un tercero. En una punta del hilo, millones de personas consumen cocaína o alguna otra droga alucinógena. Se calcula que hay 200 millones de consumidores de droga, el 4% de la población mundial. La mayoría de los consumidores vive en los Estados Unidos o en algún otro país desarrollado, mientras que los productores trabajan en Bolivia o Perú o en el sur de Asia. Entre el punto de producción y el punto de consumo se extiende la vasta red de las personas que elaboran, exportan e importan la droga. Además, después que se cobra el dinero, otra red de operadores se ocupa de lavarlo, reintroduciéndolo en los circuitos financieros. La mayoría de la gente, aun cuando enfrente un problema global, sigue pensando en términos nacionales. Los colombianos se oponen a la extradición de los narcotraficantes para ser juzgados en los tribunales de los Estados Unidos, aunque estos se hallan en mejores condiciones de juzgar y castigar que los tribunales de Colombia. Asimismo, los ciudadanos norteamericanos se oponen a una intervención directa de las Fuerzas Armadas de su país en América Latina con el fin de aportar su avanzada tecnología militar a la lucha contra el narcotráfico. Los latinoamericanos piensan que la presencia de tropas norteamericanas violaría su soberanía. Los norteamericanos no quieren que sus muchachos mueran fuera de casa. Pero ninguno de los narcotraficantes se preocupa por la soberanía. Desde la producción hasta el consumo y el lavado de dinero, el narcotráfico opera como una enorme organización multinacional.
Directions. 1. Shadow. 2. Dual task. 3. Paraphrase. The right to competent counsel. If you were ever accused of committing a crime, would you be content to be defended by a lawyer just 6 months out of law school? A lawyer who had never before been in a trial? A drunk? Would you want to be told you could only have a lawyer who was willing to handle your case, however long and complicated, for no more than $1,000? Or told that lawyers would bid to defend you and you would get the cheapest? I don't think anyone would want to face a shoplifting charge with that kind of legal representation, let alone a murder rap. But there are people who want Americans to go on trial for their lives with inexperienced, incompetent lawyers. Lawyers who, even if they knew how to put on an effective defense, lack the money. That is the gist of an anti-crime bill now being considered by the House of Representatives. They are trying to remove a provision that would set minimum standards for lawyers in death penalty cases. Congress is so scared of looking soft on crime that they may very well succeed. The level of legal representation in capital cases is shockingly low in this country. The National Law Journal did an extended study of capital cases in 6 southern states. It concluded, Indigent defendants on trial for their lives are frequently represented by ill-trained, unprepared, court-appointed lawyers so grossly underpaid that they literally cannot afford to do the job they know needs to be done. Congressmen are running scared on the crime issue. In this day and age, it is political suicide to take a stand in defense of the rights of criminal defendants. For those reasons, the House may be on the verge of removing what has been the safety net of our criminal law, habeas corpus, the historic remedy for injustice. The right to counsel in capital trials is hardly a radical idea. Nearly 60 years ago, a Supreme Court decision stated that the defendant in a death penalty case needs, quote, the guiding hand of counsel at every step, end quote. The government officials who are backing this bill would never have to depend on appointed counsel. But politicians need to be sensitive to the plight of less fortunate people. I think it will lie heavy on their conscience if Congress strips away the right of federal court review without assuring capital defendants of the guiding hand of competent counsel.
Lesson 2.
Directions. 1. Dual task. 2. Paraphrase. La pena de muerte. El mundo está dividido entre los que aman la vida y los que se obsesionan con la muerte. El término medio no existe. O se es una cosa o se es otra. Afortunadamente, el ser humano, desde que siente la primera palpitación de vida, desata las energías necesarias para mantenerla en su plenitud. El afán de vivir es el camino, la meta, el horizonte. El que ama la vida no se mata. Siente repulsión por el suicidio. Practica la legítima defensa, ese instinto poderoso que hasta los seres unicelulares ejercen, aunque la vida les dure una fracción de minuto. La flor que fenece en el mismo día en que nace, realiza un círculo perfecto de existencia. El que ama la vida no acepta en ninguna hipótesis la pena de muerte. Es contra su naturaleza, su voluntad de vivir, de captar hasta el último momento una gota de luz. Por eso no hay legitimidad absolutamente para la pena de muerte como el extremo recurso destinado a punir un crimen abominable, hediondo, perverso, sin un calificativo suficiente para definirlo. Si la sociedad consultada acepta que legisle sobre la pena de muerte, fijando las reglas precisas, estrictas, para su aplicación, esa sociedad, en nuestro entender, se deja conducir por un estado de emoción que sobrepasa los límites de la racionalidad, o encuentra, en esa medida, una manera de punirse a sí misma. Sea como sea, es inconcebible que la sociedad culpe a alguien por un crimen que ella no fue capaz de evitar. Es una sociedad enferma. En ese caso, no es el delincuente quien debe ser juzgado y punido, sino la propia sociedad que lo juzga y lo conduce a la silla eléctrica, a la guillotina, o al garrote vil y otras formas crueles de cegar la vida humana. Una sociedad que marginaliza millones de criaturas, que las confina, que las degrada, que las somete a la miseria, es responsable por los índices de criminalidad que se generan y crecen dentro de ella. Esa sociedad se condena a sí misma en cada individuo que de una forma o de otra comete un delito grave. Una conciencia justa, ecuánime, recta, digna, jamás se siente con el derecho de decidir si alguien debe o no permanecer vivo. La sentencia de muerte no es una punición, es un delito.
language acquisition. Directions. 1. Dual task. 2. Paraphrase. Why do some people learn new languages easily and others struggle with every syllable? What exactly is it that separates the naturally fluent from the linguistically leaden? As linguists and psychologists study individuals who easily pick up foreign languages, they have found that many of the ideas we've cultivated about the gift for language may be needlessly discouraging myths. To be sure, experts are still debating the key issue of how we absorb language in the first place. But, doctrine aside, they agree that a lot more of us could achieve conversational ease abroad if we relaxed and erased our biases toward alien sounds and cultures. To understand why some people are able to acquire languages quickly, researchers are asking basic questions about early verbal development. Why do children so flawlessly and invariably learn their native language? And why do preteens learn second languages without accents? In theory, if we could apply these youthful study models to stodgy adulthood, we'd be nearly as adept. Kids don't care whether their sentences are structurally elegant or grammatically pristine. They just want to get their message across and to understand others. When they don't, they thrash through different attempts until they're successful. In contrast to this empirical approach is so-called formal or conscious learning, in which we focus on the rules of language, achieving fluency through analysis and repetition. Most of us, of course, pick up foreign languages through conscious learning in classrooms or via audio tapes. But researchers suspect that unconscious language acquisition may actually be far superior, even for adults. Indeed, what distinguishes people who are deft at foreign languages seems to be their ability to recapture the sponge-like mind of a child. Besides, it's not necessarily how well you hear something, it's how much you let in. Linguists believe that those who are adept at languages are people who don't let their adult propensity toward abstract thinking and self-consciousness block this flow of new information. For them, acquiring a new language is a matter of filling in and refining a mosaic, not plotting a logical route to the goal.
Lesson 3.
Directions. 1. Shadow. 2. Paraphrase. Los jurados en Puerto Rico. Abstracto del Código de Enjuiciamiento Criminal de Puerto Rico. Siempre que los asuntos criminales de una sala del Tribunal Superior lo requieren, el Tribunal dictará una providencia disponiendo la comparecencia de aquel número de jurados que estimare necesarios y que se designarán por sorteo. Después de haberse dictado la orden indicada en la regla anterior, el secretario del tribunal procederá, en presencia del magistrado y en sesión pública del tribunal, a sortear los nombres de los jurados en la forma siguiente. Se agitará la urna que contenga las tarjetas con los nombres de los jurados, de manera que se mezclen todas, y entonces se sacará de dicha urna el número de tarjetas ordenado por el tribunal. Terminado el sorteo, el secretario certificará la relación de individuos seleccionados para actuar como jurados y certificará la corrección de la misma, consignando la fecha y el número de jurados designados y expresando el día, hora y sitio en que dichos jurados deberán comparecer. El pueblo o el acusado podrán recusar a todo el grupo de jurados seleccionados de acuerdo con estas reglas o a cualquier jurado individual. La recusación individual podrá ser perentoria o motivada. Los jurados deberán prestar juramento individual o colectivamente según dispusiere el tribunal, de contestar veraz y fielmente todas las preguntas que se les hicieren en relación con su capacidad para actuar como jurados. El tribunal y las partes podrán formular al jurado preguntas pertinentes a su capacidad para actuar. En todo proceso criminal, se presumirá inocente al acusado mientras no se probare lo contrario, y en caso de existir duda razonable acerca de su culpabilidad, se le absolverá. Si la duda es entre grados de un delito o entre delitos de distinta gravedad, solo podrá condenársele del grado inferior o delito de menor gravedad.
Directions. Interpret into Spanish. Sample voir dire questions. Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Ms. Smith. As the court explained, my colleague and I are going to ask you all some questions this morning to see if you can sit as fair and impartial jurors on this case. We don't want to pry into your personal life, but we need to know a little about you so that we can make sure both the people and the defendant get a fair trial here. Do you understand?
Yes, ma'am.
Are you married, Ms. Smith?
Yes, ma'am.
What does your husband do for a living?
He's a carpenter.
And do you work outside the home?
Right now I'm a housewife, but in the past I've worked as a secretary.
And how many children do you have?
4. 2 boys and 2 girls.
What are their ages?
12, 14, 17, and 18.
Are they all in school, or do any of them work?
They just go to school.
Do you know any of the parties involved in this case?
No, I don't think so.
Do you know anyone involved in law enforcement?
Well, one of our neighbors is a sheriff, and my brother-in-law is a probation officer. Is that what you mean by law enforcement?
Yes. Anyone who works in the courts, a police department, a prison, anywhere in the justice system. Now, do you ever discuss your neighbor's work with him?
No, we don't talk about his work. I hardly ever see him.
Now, have you or any of your friends or relatives ever been accused of a felony?
Not that I know of. Oh, wait. I think my brother got a drunk driving charge. Is that a felony?
No, that's a misdemeanor in most cases. Would the fact that your brother was arrested for driving under the influence prevent you from being fair and impartial in this case?
No, it was a long time ago, and anyway, he got what he deserved.
Have you or any of your friends or relatives ever been the victim of or been involved in any way in a felony?
No, not that I know of.
Now, there's going to be evidence of drug use and alcohol consumption in this case, Mrs. Smith. Will you be able to sit on this case and hear evidence of that nature and remain fair and impartial, Mrs. Smith?
I'm not sure I understand what you mean.
Well, would you automatically assume a person was guilty just because they were under the influence of a drug or alcohol, regardless of the other evidence?
No, I understand that we have to consider all the facts before making up our minds.
Very good. So, do you promise to give the defendant the benefit of the doubt, and if the people do not meet the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt in this case, you will find the defendant not guilty?
Yes.
Thank you. Your Honor, we would like to thank and excuse Mrs. Smith.
Mrs. Smith? Please return to the jury commissioner's office. The clerk will call the next name on the roster, and then we will break for our lunch recess. Prospective jurors and all members of the panel are admonished by the court that they are not to discuss any details of this case with anyone or to form or express an opinion thereon. The court stands adjourned until 1:30 this afternoon.
Lesson 4.
Directions. Number 1, shadow. Number 2, paraphrase. La función del traductor e intérprete público en el orden judicial de Argentina. El traductor e intérprete público en el orden judicial debe considerarse como auxiliar de la justicia en cuanto concierne a las tareas que como tal debe realizar. Dentro de la labor judicial, necesitan los jueces valerse de los conocimientos técnicos de determinados funcionarios, tales como los peritos, calígrafos, ingenieros, contadores, etc., entre los cuales también se encuentran los traductores e intérpretes públicos, cuya función consiste en traducir los documentos redactados en idiomas extranjeros y la interpretación verbal. Se llama función judicial a la participación que puede tener el traductor en el hecho de realizar su cometido en algún juicio, cualquiera que fuese su naturaleza, sea por designación de juez o autoridad competente, o a propuesta de la parte interesada en juicio o bien de oficio por el juzgado. En cuanto al cometido que debe llenar en sus funciones, la autoridad que compete indicará concretamente la pieza, trozo o documento por traducir, ya sea parcial o totalmente, como así también el lugar donde éste se encuentra e instruirá verbalmente si es necesario. Efectuado el nombramiento del perito traductor y notificado éste, aceptará el cargo personalmente ante el secretario de actuación del juzgado que entiende en la causa. La exactitud de la traducción es un elemento esencialísimo que debe tenerse en cuenta en todo momento. Para la consecución de este fin, es de todo punto de vista necesario que la traducción sea el reflejo fiel del documento y que la interpretación sea el reflejo fiel del testimonio oral. La obligación del traductor o intérprete es observar fielmente todos y cada uno de aquellos elementos que llevarán al ánimo del juez la seguridad de que la versión es reflejo fiel del acto o pieza traducida.
Directions. 1. Paraphrase. Try to convert passive voice to active voice wherever possible. 2. Interpret into Spanish. Standards for interpreted proceedings. An interpreter is needed if, upon examination by the court, a party or witness is unable to speak English so as to be understood directly by counsel, court, and jury, or if a party is unable to understand and speak English sufficiently to comprehend the proceedings and to assist counsel in the conduct of the case. The interpreter should conduct a pre-appearance interview with the party or witness for whom he or she will be interpreting to enable the interpreter to become familiar with speech patterns and to determine what technical or special terms may be used. Except when consent is given by counsel, the pending proceedings should not be discussed with the party unless the party's counsel is present, or with a witness unless counsel for the party calling the witness is present. A court interpreter's best skills and judgment should be used to interpret accurately without adding or omitting any information and without altering the tone. The judge and all parties must be informed of any actual or apparent conflict of interest the interpreter may have. Any condition that interferes with the objectivity of an interpreter constitutes a conflict of interest. A conflict may exist if the interpreter is acquainted with or related to any witness or party to the action, or if the interpreter has an interest in the outcome of the case. An interpreter should not engage in conduct creating the appearance of bias, prejudice, or partiality. A court interpreter should not disclose privileged communications between counsel and client, and should not give legal advice to parties and witnesses. He or she should maintain a professional relationship with court officers, parties, witnesses, and attorneys. It is also important for the court interpreter to engage in continuing education to maintain and improve his or her interpreting skills and knowledge of procedures used by the courts.
Lesson 5.
Directions number 1, shadow. Number 2, paraphrase. Los testigos. El término testigo se refiere a la persona que da testimonio de una cosa o que presencia o adquiere directo o verdadero conocimiento de una cosa y luego se presenta al tribunal para comunicar el conocimiento que tiene acerca de algún hecho o acto. El vocablo tiene importancia jurídica dentro del campo procesal, por cuanto la prueba testimonial constituye un medio de comprobar judicialmente la veracidad de los hechos que se debaten en un litigio o causa criminal. La falsedad de la declaración del testigo constituye el delito de falso testimonio o perjurio. Excepto lo que en contrario se disponga por la ley, en todos los juicios el testimonio de los testigos será oral y en sesión pública, y la admisibilidad de evidencia y la competencia y privilegios de los testigos se regirán por las disposiciones de la Ley de Evidencia de Puerto Rico. Mientras se estuviere examinando a uno de los testigos, el tribunal podrá excluir todos los demás que no hubieren sido examinados. Podrá asimismo ordenar que los testigos permanezcan separados y se les impida conversar entre sí hasta que se les examine.
Directions. Interpret into Spanish. Witness testimony, burglary.
Raise your right hand to be sworn. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you are about to give in the cause now pending before this court will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
State your name and address for the record.
Robert Martin, 13932 South Benson Avenue in Albany, New York.
Please be seated. Mr. Martin, what is your occupation?
I'm an accountant.
I want to direct your attention to July 12th of this year at about 3:20 in the morning. Do you recall being in the area of 1615 East Norberg Avenue?
Yes.
What's located there?
That was the motel that we were staying at that night. It's a travel lodge.
And that is located in Redland County, to the best of your knowledge?
I guess so. I'm from out of town.
Do you recall what room you were staying in?
I believe it was 234.
Okay. Do you recall what time it was when you got to your room that night?
Yes, we checked in at approximately midnight, 11:30, 12 o'clock.
And who were you with that night?
My wife.
After you checked in, did you go to your room?
Yes.
And about between 3 and 3:30 in the morning, were you sleeping?
Yes.
Did you have any of your belongings or property with you when you were in the room?
Yes, of course.
Did you have any money with you?
Yes.
Do you know how much money you had?
About $320.
Is that money you had yourself, or is that including your money and the money your wife had?
That's money that both of us had. She had money in her purse.
Do you know how much money she had in her purse?
If I remember correctly, two $50 bills.
And what money did you yourself have?
I had two $100 bills in my wallet and approximately $20 in smaller bills in one of my pockets.
And where was your wife's purse?
It was on the couch that was in the room.
Did anything happen that morning to cause you to check your wallet and pants and your wife's purse to determine whether or not there was any money there?
Sometime between 3 and 3:30, my wife woke up and thought she heard a noise. Then we lay back down in bed. Within a few minutes, we received a call from the management of the hotel saying that we should check our room, that they suspected that we had been robbed. And at that point, I found out that the money was missing.
When you searched your wife's purse and your pants, did you find money missing?
It was all missing.
And that was the $300 that you described?
Yes.
Did you give anybody permission to come into your room?
No.
Did you give anyone permission to have the money?
No.
Did you check the doors or windows or exits to your room to determine whether or not they were in any changed form from when you first arrived?
I wouldn't know about that. I knew the door was locked, and that was in the same position. The window, we hadn't checked because it was behind the curtains, and they were closed.
Thank you. I have no further questions. Counsel, you may cross.